Hello, this is Mark Peacock, and welcome to the Travel Commons Podcast. This is Travel Commons Podcast number 15, recorded Friday, September 23rd, 2005. We're going to be talking a bit about planes today, our topics being begging for business, not much left to pull out of the cabin, and some friends tell their classic travel stories, a little Sturm und Drang. This week, a little delayed in getting this out to you. I was intending to record this in the bathroom of the Sheraton on Fisherman's Wharf in San Francisco, but I picked up a cold, probably on the flight out to San Francisco on Monday, and it was in full force Wednesday, Thursday. Now, today, Friday, I'm feeling okay, though I know my voice sounds, would tell you otherwise. I'm in that situation now where I sound worse than I feel. On Wednesday, Thursday, I felt worse than I sounded, so this could actually be a little more painful for you than it is for me, but I will try and push this thing forward. I'll tell you, I shouldn't be surprised that I picked up a cold, though. You know, what are we, two weeks into the school season? So, you know, parents have been taking their toddlers back to preschool and kindergarten. The little Petri dishes get to exchange cold germs and bring them back home to infect their parents. And then their parents get unpacked airplanes like my flight on Monday out to San Francisco and infect people like me. Because, you know, I don't care about HEPA filters or, you know, what the volume of air passing through. The fact is, I'm sitting, you know, a foot from somebody's mouth. You know, I'll tell you, likewise, I feel sorry for the guy who was sitting a foot from me in the middle seat on my flight home last night. San Francisco was packed this week. The Fisherman's Wharf Sheraton was pretty inconveniently located for my destination in downtown. However, Oracle World took over San Francisco this week, and this was the best I could get within about a 30-mile radius of the city, even when invoking the magical powers, the supposed magical powers, I guess, of my Platinum, Marriott, and Starwood cards. I'll tell you, though, I lucked out. A colleague of mine ended up at the Days Inn in Oakland Coliseum, or next to the Oakland Coliseum, and he said it was the worst hotel he's ever stayed in, which, you know, you think about this, with 10 years of consulting experience and a stint in the Navy before that, that's saying a lot. You know, he said the sheets didn't look washed when he pulled the cover back, and he said the pillow smelled like stale patchouli oil. He was just disgusted. He said he wrapped the pillow in a t-shirt that he had and laid down very lightly on the bed and got, you know, lousy sleep that night. And he said the morning came, he completely packed up his bag. He figured, you know, he was sleeping on the office floor, it was going to be better than this. And he said he left the t-shirt behind. I was bouncing around the West Coast this week, flew into SFO Monday morning, did an up and back between Oakland and John Wayne Orange County Santa Ana Airport, and then flew back home last night. That was my first time flying in and out of Oakland, and if I had flown out of there sooner, I absolutely would have put it on the list of the worst airports that we had in our earlier poll. It was miserable. I mean, just getting a cup of coffee was a hassle. However, on the positive side, the TSA folks were nice and there weren't any shoe problems. Also, want to apologize to any subscribers who use Comcast as their ISP. I'll tell you, for some unknown reason, Comcast blocked the IP address for the Travel Commons server. It took me a week and about two trouble tickets to get it right. Of course, you know, it took me a couple of hours of rebooting my PC and flushing various DNS caches to convince them that it was their problem. And once I did that, it only took them about a week to get the thing resolved. Oh, and finally, I broke down and bought a mic, a little condenser one from Radio Shack. You guys have been giving me feedback that it would be the one thing that would improve the podcast. So I'm hoping it's an improvement over the iRivers built-in mic. Drop me a line. Let me know what you think. Follow-up items. One of my best friends from high school lives in Mobile, Alabama, and while the Katrina coverage has focused on New Orleans, Scott dropped me a line about the impact on Mobile. He said, "I feel like Mother Nature has been firing ranging shots at us. Hurricane Ivan made landfall just to the east of us on September 16th last year, and now Katrina not that far to the west of us on August 29th. We should be in our full sights for the next one." He said, "Katrina was worse for downtown Mobile than Ivan because of the storm surge." So the storm surge in Mobile Bay was 12 feet, and actually his brother-in-law's office was in about 8 feet of water. He asked me, do you remember when I was down there a few years back? And he said, we ate at a seafood dive on the bay, Nancy's. He said, the storm surge took out the entire outside dining room and flooded the restaurant. Dauphine Island was hit hard, he said, but it always is. And there's an estimated 50 to 60% of the weekend homes on the west side of the island were completely destroyed. And the coastal fishing village of Bayou La Batre, I think, which he said is famous for the setting of Forrest Gump's shrimp business, was also hit very hard, with many homes flooded or destroyed and many of the shrimp boats shoved up on the land. And of course, he said the hurricane damage is much worse along the Mississippi Gulf Coast, which took the brunt of the storm. He said the media focused on almost solely on New Orleans, but a 90-mile stretch of the coast looks like it's been carpet-bombed. The damage much worse than that of Camille in 1969, which was a Category 5 hurricane and had winds of 200 miles an hour. The difference, Scott says, is that the storm surge was bigger this time, 30 feet along the Mississippi coast. He said from Pascagoula to Biloxi, Gulfport, Ocean Springs, Pescristian, Bay St. Louis, he said it's total destruction for about a mile inland. I can't imagine, he said, how the process of rebuilding will begin. On a much lighter note, I was sort of spelunking around my web server logs and spotted a new referral site, somebody who sent some traffic over, Team TNA. The heading describes it, Thomas and Amy talk about whatever's on their mind this week. I listened to their latest podcast on my flight out to San Francisco on Monday. Amy very kindly mentioned Travel Commons as one of her favorite podcasts, and I hope they're able to stuff this podcast into the MP3 player that they're loading up before they head out on their 30-hour flight to India. That ought to be loads of fun. Hey, as always, thanks to everyone who sent me notes at comments@travelcommons.com or left comments on the Travel Commons website, www.travelcommons.com. Keep them coming. As you can see, I steal shamelessly for content for this podcast.
Please, 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 please.
The first topic on today's Travel Commons podcast, begging for business. We've gotten some good action on our favorite U.S. airline poll. United and Delta continue to trade sort of the number one and number two spots, but now American has actually moved up to tie for second. And if you haven't voted yet, please come to the Travel Commons website and look for the poll on the left-hand side of the page. Living in Chicago, I get exposed to most of the airlines, and I've flown all but one of them listed in the poll, JetBlue being the notable exception, and they had their own problems this week coming into LAX, or actually departing out of LAX. Chicago's a rare sort of tri-hub. United and American have traditional hubs out of O'Hare, and Southwest has a big presence at Midway. I tend to split my travel between American and United, depending mostly on schedule. And I do a bit of short-haul Midwest traffic out of Midway on Southwest. I flew United to SFO Monday morning. It was a packed flight, everybody coming out to see Larry and the Oracle show. I was pleasantly surprised, though, to snag the last first-class upgrade. Indeed, I was standing at the door of the A320 ready to bury myself into seat 23F for 4 hours when the gate agent came down the jetway and called my name. Mr. Peacock, wait right there. And then she came back with a boarding card for seat 1D. I was pleasantly surprised. Usually the gate agents write you off the upgrade list if you've already boarded the plane. Too much work, I guess, having to unbook you out of one seat in the computer and rebook you into another. And they're usually in a hurry to get their get the wrap-up documentation done so they can get the flight out on time. So I sit down, and actually a couple minutes later, the pilot came out of the cockpit. He gave a plane card and his business card to everybody in first class. A few of us started looking at each other with sort of raised eyebrows. Did the fuel bill come out a little bit high today? You need some extra change? They're still in Chapter 11. Did the credit card bounce? What's going on here? No, instead, Captain Bradley started by thanking us for our business. Then he gave us the pre-flight briefing in person. We'll be flying at 35,000 feet today and going through around Fort Dodge, Iowa. And then finally, he asked us for more of our business. I'm not too proud to beg, he said, and he smiled as he headed back into the cockpit. And then when a lightning storm over O'Hare held us on the ground, Captain Bradley opened the cockpit door and invited visitors in to chat and take pictures. I eventually got up, actually to go to the bathroom. Captain Bradley saw me and said, "Hey, come on in." I said, "Just a sec. I'll be back in just a sec." And ducked into the lav. Coming out, I did stop off. I stopped off, felt, felt guilty, went into the cockpit just for a minute. Yeah, it's a striking view, you know, looking straight out of the cockpit, especially because our usual view is sort of out the side. And then I took the view and I asked him why he comes out and presses the flush. He said, "I've always been a people person, and they tell us that passengers want to hear more from the pilot. Passengers have a choice, and we need all the business that we can get. I haven't always found United employees so accommodating and pleasant. I used to avoid flying United, flying American, unless I had no other choice, because it seemed every third to sort of fifth time I flew them, some United employee would just piss me off. And literally, and I apologize for the French, but I mean, that, you know, a typical incident some years back, I was racing to catch a United flight from Detroit to Chicago. I gave the gate agent my ticket, ran down the jetway, only to come to a dead end. It was closed. I'd gone down the wrong jetway. I walked back up the jetway to see the gate agent smiling at me. "Well, guess you won't make that mistake again," he said sarcastically. "You're right," I said, and went down the right jetway to catch my flight. He thought I was agreeing with him and thought I was talking about going down, you know, not being in such a hurry and going down the right jetway. Actually, what I was really talking about was I wasn't going to make the mistake of flying United again. I didn't fly them for 2 years after hearing that smart-ass comment. You know, it was always something. Some rude comment, some refusal to help just made me hate myself for giving United another try. But, you know, after United went into bankruptcy at the end of 2002, I began to notice a change. The same people who were rude began to smile. The folks who wouldn't help were now running down jetways with upgrades. And the pilot, the sort of the master of the plane, the master of the universe, he was coming out of the cockpit and asking me for my business. 33 months of bankruptcy, salary givebacks, abandoned pension plans. You know, that's an awfully big attitude adjustment wrench to be applied. But the change in the people has worked, at least for me. They've been getting a lot more of my business over the past 2 years. And will continue as long as the experience is a good one, like the one on Monday. Even with the delay, it was a good experience. You know, great gate agent went out of her way, and the pilot came out and, you know, kept us informed and was a great guy. You know, like I said, the attitude adjustment wrench worked. Of course, it could be just a matter of perception. You know, comparing United employees to TSA screeners, well, you know, that's going to require a whole bigger wrench. Keep it. Second topic on today's Travel Commons podcast. Yes, we really do need those seats. An article in Tuesday's Wall Street Journal talked about the U.S. Airways' plan to save money by pulling seat power outlets out of their airplanes starting next week. You know, this decontenting the plane cabin seems to be all the rage amongst the legacy airlines. Everybody eliminated free food service. Hell, even Northwest did away with pretzels, turning these flights into really sort of flying picnic sites as everybody carries on their McDonald's burgers or salads. American and then Delta pulled out the pillows. Northwest and Delta have cut out complimentary magazines. You know, I think Greyhound buses have more amenities than some of these airplanes. And, you know, and then you look on the other side and, you know, folks like JetBlue are putting in live TV service. So, I got to think that the legacy guys are just racing down a rat hole here. I didn't mourn the loss of every amenity. I'd stopped eating the airline meals some time ago. The sort of leather and feather offerings in coach just weren't mapping into my personal culinary desires. And though the picnic ground ambiance isn't great, I actually much prefer the McDonald's salads that you can pick up to the wilted bits of iceberg lettuce that the airlines used to offer. Pulling the pillows, that was a bit harder, though, especially on the West Coast halls. It's tough for me to catch a nap sitting up without a pillow in the crick of my neck. And when the American Airlines CEO glibly suggested that people, they should just bring their own pillows, 3 months of my business immediately moved over to United and Southwest. I mean, here was a guy who had absolutely no idea what it's like to travel in the back of a plane for a living. Two amenities, though, are important to me. One is absolutely in-seat power supplies, and the second is in-flight magazines. You know, the in-seat power supplies are a key to maintaining any sort of efficiency on the road. Efficient travel for me is a constant balance between carrying what you need and keeping down the weight and the volume of what you're schlepping through airplanes and airports and cabs and rental buses and so on. I use a small ThinkPad, and then rather than carrying extra batteries, I've consolidated all my power supply needs into the iGo system, and it works pretty well, and it also plugs into in-seat power supply jacks and also car lighters. You know, so with this, on a four-hour flight to San Francisco or LA, I can crank through a bunch of emails with a nice bright screen, or I can watch a DVD that I've ripped onto my laptop. Shh, don't tell the Motion Picture Association. With no in-seat power, I'm relegated to squinting at a dim screen until it goes dead halfway through my flight. The in-flight magazines are important to me sort of as reading safety stock. If I'm stuck on the runway, either as 29th for departure, like we were on Monday, or for a couple hours in Detroit's infamous penalty box waiting for O'Hare to clear up, which is probably what's going to happen to me next Friday when I go out, I've got to do a day trip out to Detroit. You know, either one of those, I could pretty quickly chew through my own reading material. And that's when I reach for the in-flight magazine, sort of in my time of need, my time for something to divert me from the frustrations of our air traffic system. Now, I think most of the airlines do a pretty good job here. They've all got pretty good travel writing. United's three perfect days in Amsterdam is great. You know, it's tight, it's succinct, it's to the point. American's sort of celebrity in a city used to be good when it had people talking about their favorite places in their hometowns. John Cusack did a really nice one on Chicago. You know, but now it seems to have sort of degenerated to the star of the week plugging their latest movie. This week's is a perfect example. Jodie Foster talking about Berlin. I mean, this is somebody who grew up in L.A. But Berlin just happens to be the location of her latest movie. You know, I mean, who's going to take a Berit Brat recommendation seriously from her? I mean, isn't she some sort of West Coast macrobiotic vegetarian? And all these magazines actually are pretty rich in gadget reporting. A few weeks back, I saw in Delta Sky magazine a $99 solar-powered iPod charger that I've been really jonesing for ever since. American Airlines magazine comes out twice a month, which is nice for frequent travelers. After sort of a couple of weeks, the United or Delta or Southwest magazines are just sort of worthless. And they're looking sort of beat up, too. Though I think if I really think about it, I think I'd trade the extra magazine on American to get the pillows back. But I'll tell you, you know you're in trouble when you have to reach for the SkyMall catalog. 40 minutes out of O'Hare, half the people around me are paging through the SkyMall. One guy is examining the Bose headset description. The woman across the aisle from me is studying the Orvis suede jackets. But I tell you, I'm most worried about the guy next to me. He seems particularly interested in the Lord of the Rings jewelry. The last topic on today's Travel Commons podcast, classic travel stories from some friends. In San Francisco, I reached out to some friends to help me with the podcast. You know, way back in Travel Commons podcast number 3, when I did the first classic travel stories bit, I said that when you get a group of road warriors together with a couple of beers, the stories just start coming. So that's what I did Wednesday night. Had some beers with some friends of mine, Alan Marco and his wife, Chris Chufo, who are inaugural Travel Commons podcast listeners, and sat down in the bar of the Sheraton, and I gave him my new Radio Shack mic and asked him to tell a couple of travel stories. So first here's Chris's story.
So when you travel, you can find that you can get very blasé about going through airports and getting on an airplane, and you sort of take for granted for the fact that you're at 35,000 feet in a titanium tube hanging above the earth, and we were about an hour outside of Chicago, and the movie had just ended, so everybody's blinds were down, and it was kind of dusk-ish. And the guy sitting next to me was obviously a very seasoned traveler. He was wearing a suit, he was clapping away on his computer the entire time, you know, didn't look up once while they were reading the safety rules, just couldn't be bothered, because he just does this all the time. And we were sitting there, and the movie just ended, and I had my headphones on, and all of a sudden, with no warning whatsoever comes this blinding flash of white light. It was like when you watch the History Channel and they show those movies of the guys testing the A-bombs and they're sitting there in the lawn chairs with the goggles on and you see that flash of light. That's what it was like. And about 5 seconds after that, there's this crack that I could hear through my headphones, through the music. So, you know, as someone who frequently travels, of course, I'm trying to completely keep my cool. And the guy next to me, Mr. Savvy Traveler with his computer, was white as a sheet and his mouth is hanging open. So I look over at him and he looks at me and goes, "What in the hell was that?" So I said to him, "Well, open the blind." So we open the blind and we look out and I said, "Well, the wing's not on fire, so the engine's not burning." I said, "There's no smoke, so my guess is it's not a bomb. We're not careening towards the earth at about 800 miles an hour. So my theory going right now is that it wasn't a bomb." I said, "I think we were struck by lightning." So, you know, we all calm ourselves down. We start breathing again. The flight keeps going on. And about another 15 minutes, the captain comes on and says, "You know, we're going to be heading into Chicago. We're going to start taking our descent." The flight attendant sits down and she's facing us because it was one of those kind of planes which is facing us. And she's just chattering away like this whole incident, like never even happened. So finally, the guy who's still shallow breathing next to me, I look over at him and I finally felt like I needed to say something. And I just said to her, I said, "You know, was that lightning, that big flash of blinding light and that big noise?" She's like, "Oh yeah, planes get hit by lightning all the time." I said, "You know, I've read that, but I bet you a lot of people don't know that." I think there's probably a lot of people who are fairly frightened right now. I, for one, would feel a lot better if you just kind of reassured us. So 5 more minutes go by and the captain comes on and explains that we were hit by lightning and it happens all the time and there's nothing to be scared of. Of course, this is now 20 minutes later. And you hear this collective sort of sigh of relief. And that was it. But it just really showed that even when something you're not expecting to happen happens at 35,000 feet, it can really unnerve you.
And I was sort of continuing along that theme. Here's Alan's thoughts about the effects of lightning on a trip.
We're in the waiting area, and the plane's out there, and they said, "Well, it's going to be delayed for about a half an hour." The flight was coming in from someplace like Chicago or something, and they told us it got struck by lightning on the way in. That's all they told us at the time, and so we're just sitting around, and we notice that out comes this mechanic guy with, you know, an extension ladder. It's like 10 feet outside the window is the nose of the plane. And he comes right over to the nose, and he puts the extension ladder up against the plane, and he climbs up. He's got a roll of duct tape dangling from his belt. And, you know, at this time, a small crowd has gathered at the window, and they're looking at the guy, because this is the plane we're going to be flying to Paris in. It's like, what is he doing out there? You know, he's kind of like monkeying around with, like, you know, it looked like he was scraping paint off or something. And he takes the roll of duct tape off his belt and he rips off like a 6-inch piece. He just slaps it on the plane, on the nose of the plane. And he's rubbing it and make sure that it's, you know, it's okay. And then he kind of looks over and he notices like 30 people staring at him with kind of like this shocked expression on their faces. Like, what's going on out there? And he's nodding his head, kind of like, you know, we can't hear him through the glass, but he's kind of like saying, no, it's okay, it's okay. So he climbs down the ladder, and like 2 minutes later, he shows up on the jetway. He's knocking on the door, and the attendant lets him back into the waiting area at the gate area, and he says, "Folks, I just want to tell you, the plane was struck by lightning, and the lightning found a defect in one of the rivets, and that's where it exited. It found a rivet and it kind of blew it out, and they had to locate it, and they did locate it." And he's like, "It's not duct tape, it's a Teflon tape, and it's only temporary. The plane's fine." So he put us all at ease with his explanation, but it was pretty interesting to observe when it was happening.
Thanks to Alan and Chris for those stories. I think they do a good job of illustrating what Captain Bradley, the United pilot, in Topic 1 talked about. People want to hear what's going on, especially when you're hanging in midair at 35,000 feet. Okay, that's it. That's the end of Travel Commons podcast number 15. You've only got a minute or so left to listen to my my cold, ravaged voice. I appreciate all the comments, and both directly to me, the emails at comments@travelcommons.com, or the comments that folks leave on the travelcommons.com website. I also check out the comment board of podcastalley.com if you want to leave something there. Hope you all enjoyed the podcast, especially folks who've been new subscribers. And I hope everybody stays subscribed. Take care. Until I talk to you next time. Bye-bye.